Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks very much, Dermot. Good afternoon on this Wednesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 on ray@rte.ie. Is this the last day of summer? Questions, please, or answers to 51551. I arrived in this afternoon into the office and there was a lot of disappointment on faces. But seemingly earlier on, there was excitement because the word went round as early as 7:30 this morning that there was a huge offer on the Brown Thomas website that runners, trainers, whatever you call them yourself, that are usually 150 and 170 euro, were going for 10 and 30 euro. Everybody got on and ordered them. Some people even ordered two pairs. Veja is the brand name. I don't know if you know it. You'll see people wearing white with the little V. They're Veja, Brazilian brand. And they've been creating sneakers in a different way, mixing social projects, economic justice and ecological materials. And I think they're the first brand to make vegan trainers, sneakers, tackies, whatever you're calling them themselves. Anyway, huge excitement this morning and the WhatsApp groups and social media was alive with this bargain on the Brown Thomas website. So people flocked, ordered two pairs, three pairs, blah, blah, blah. And then disappointment. It was horrific because they'd made a mistake. And what does Conor Pope say to us always? If it appears too good to be true, it is too good to be true. And on this occasion, it was too good to be true. So Brown Thomas issued an apology and said that orders sold at an incorrect price will be cancelled as per our terms and conditions. We are investigating this technical issue and apologise for any inconvenience. Disappointed shoppers. And they took to social media to voice their ire. The money has already been deducted from my debit card. My order must be processed today, one customer demanded. Bad form, should honour it, said another. These orders should have all been honoured by Brown Thomas, not the customer's fault. They had a pricing error. Brand reputation and customer satisfaction should be more important to a company like Brown Thomas, suggested a third. Conor Pope is writing about it in the Irish Times and he knows a thing about consumer rights. And I've been talking to him for years and I know what he was going to say, what he was going to write in the Irish Times, that the law, unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, predominantly ladies, is on the side of Brown Thomas on this occasion. According to Irish consumer groups, the retailer has a get-out clause. If there is a genuine mistake on the part of the trader to display the correct price, they can claim that there is a defect in consent and the contract may be set aside. So it's terrible though, isn't it? When you feel you've a bargain and it's great and you get elated and the buzz and the adrenaline's rushing and then the trainer's cut from beneath you. The Veja, very expensive trainers, cut from beneath you. Disappointment. Not good. I remember years ago, and this wasn't a mistake, but I remember in the 90s, I think it was Hoover. So they offered some promotion. They were trying to sell their products. And I think it wasn't here, it was in the UK, where they offered free flights to America when you bought a Hoover. Yeah, I know. Like, who okayed that? Like, anyway, somebody did, and there were big posters, big promotion. And of course, at the time, flights to America were very expensive. Hoover's vacuum cleaners weren't that expensive, and it nearly put the whole thing out of business because there was a run on it. People who didn't need Hoovers were buying them just to get the tickets to go to the United States of America. And I'm sure there have been other ones along the way, and you might tell us about them. 51551 ray@rte.ie. British Bake Off is back. All the bees. It's back Tuesday the 13th. And that'll be good news for a lot of families around the country. It's one of those shows you can all sit, all the generations can sit down and watch it, and it's harmless fun, and it's very funny. Matt Lucas, and it's just something worth looking at. It's appointment viewing in a world where there's very little appointment viewing. So we're happy that British Bake Off is back next Tuesday week. It will be next Tuesday week. And if you're having a bun, you might want a cup of tea as well. You probably saw this yesterday. Drinking tea may be linked to lower risk of death. It's data from the UK Biobank. I don't know if you know about the UK Biobank, but they've amassed like just an amazing amount of data on people, their eating habits, exercise habits. Like, this is on hundreds of thousands of people. And they make the data available to people who want to study different things. So you can request access to the UK Biobank, you might have a theory that drinking tea helps you live longer. And you go to them, you say, can I have the data, please? And they'll give you the data and you do the sort of the number crunching on it. And then you come out with a report. It's an amazing facility to have. Anyway, this is what they found. When compared with those who do not have tea, people who consume two or more cups of tea had between 9% and 13% lower risk of mortality, researchers said. Now, I'm wondering, did they factor in all the things around tea? Because it's not just drinking a hot beverage, is it? It's the social aspect of a cup of tea. And maybe if you were a person who was drinking more tea in a day, then maybe you have more social interaction because you're sitting down with somebody for a chat, etc. Maybe that's part of it. I see that Margaret Leahy, friend of the show, her with the 16 clocks on the wall, she has 8 cups of tea a day. 8 cups. That sounds like a lot to me. 8 cups of tea. Because there is caffeine in tea. It would affect your sleep. Now, I don't know if that's a record. I don't know if 8 is a lot or a little, because I'm not a tea drinker myself. But anyway, that's what she says. 8 cups of tea. So she should be around for a long time, Margaret Leahy, according to the research anyway. 9% and 13% lower risk of mortality if you drink more tea. Of course, there's research like that published every day, isn't there? I love this one. It's from the States, and we've said this numerous times on the show, and it is from research again, that one of the big things that couples fight about are domestic chores. So finance is important, disciplining children, if you have children, is important. And up there with those two is the divvying out of domestic chores, washing up, hoovering, making the bed, putting the bin out, cutting the grass, all that sort of thing. Well, Lawrence Stephen Solicitor's firm has created a new prenup for people who are getting married, and it's called the Clean-Up Prenup. Hey! The Clean-Up Prenup. And it allows couples to agree what tasks, roles and responsibilities they'll do after the wedding day. That sounds like a brilliant idea to me. So it's to help tackle gender disparity in domestic cleaning, because in all the research, it's still the majority of work is done by the woman in relationships, in traditional heterosexual relationships. What would you sign up for? Because, you know, so you have to divvy up all the things, don't you? The washing up, the filling of the dishwasher, the hoovering, the making of the beds, the bringing out the rubbish. Keep listing them. All those things, the dusting, all those things have to be divvied up in a prenup, cleanup. Or even a clean-up prenup. You might just do that yourselves without going to solicitors in the States. You might just agree between yourselves what you should be doing after you get married. Madonna is in the news because she has a new greatest hits out, and she has broken a record by releasing that, because this week she has become the first woman in history to chart a top 10 album in the United States in the last 5 decades. So she had her first hit album and single in the 1980s. And here we are in 2022 and she's still having hits. Actually, her first single, although it wasn't a hit, can't remember the name, but it was released in 1982, which would be 40 years ago. I don't know how you feel about Madonna and our music, but we just go back to the decades and play something maybe from some of the decades anyway. This was 1983. I'm just looking at some of her stats there. She has 7 Grammys, nominated 28 times, 13 UK number one singles, 63 UK top 10 singles. Just amazing. Was this the 80s as well? It was 1986. And of course, not only a singer, but an actor as well. She starred in Desperately Seeking Susan. Remember that in 1985? She won a Golden Globe for Best Actress in Evita in 1996. She has 77 acting credits on her IMDb, nearly as many as Colm Meaney. And she's been in videos, of course, and in TV shows like Will and Grace. And then the 90s, yeah. Come on. And this one. And the Naughties. She sampled ABBA on that one, didn't she? Gimme, gimme, gimme a man after midnight. She's worth $850 million, according to Celebrity Net Worth. She's been married to Sean Penn, actor Sean Penn, and then she married director Guy Ritchie. They split in 2008. She has six children: Lourdes, Rocco, David, Mercy, twins Esther and Stella, who are both 10. And here's the thing that I didn't know. She has released a line of children's books called The English Roses. I knew that she released that book of photographs called Sex. Wasn't there an Irish connection there with that? Anyway, that's Madonna. Still making records and breaking records. Hey! 51551, ray@rte.ie. We'll tell you about our quiz in a moment, but since we're talking about her, we might as well play one of her songs in its entirety. And you can dance. Yes, you can. Good afternoon.
For inspiration. Come on.
Into the groove. Breaking news there, just for people who are following it. The jury in the trial of Ryan Giggs has been discharged after failing to reach a verdict on any of the three counts he faced. And I'm sure there'll be more about that later on in Drive Time. Now, what are you saying to 51551? We got our honeymoon in 1993 out of Hoover in Ireland. So the promotion was in Ireland. And somebody says, yeah, the Hoover applied to Ireland also, as my husband and I availed of it in 1994. Not only were they giving us a free flight, but two free flights. We went to Florida, says Caroline. And my husband and I flew to USA on the Hoover deal. We bought a dishwasher and got two flights for £99 for the two of us. It was the early 1990s, says Breda in Killarney. And Hoover did that promotion in Ireland, but unlike the UK, where it nearly sent the company bust, Irish customers had to pay something like £100 to get the flight tickets. Despite the extra £100 on top, they still sold like the old proverbial hotcakes. My parents got a vacuum cleaner and gave me the tickets to the States for my 21st. That's Lloyd, who's now in Perth in Western Australia. You just wonder, don't you, how these things were okayed? Because it, you know, people had meetings about this. They sat around, they had to get all the promotional material typed up, and at no time did anybody say, is this a good idea? Do you think that there might be a run on this and we might go out of business? When I got married nearly 30 years ago, we had a prenup. He did the bins and I did the ironing. As you can imagine, the ironing increased dramatically with three children, but the bins stayed much the same, says Mary. And on the tea drinking, I would drink between 10 and 20 cups of tea most days, or more on days when I'm not working, says Paul in Arklow. And Jeannie, I might have 15 cups a day, so how long will I live? I'm in my 50s now. I can't tell you that, but yeah. And you read the top line figures from these research projects, and you don't know what's going on behind it. And did they factor in all those things that I was talking about and all those? But anyway, what they're saying is it's likely that if you drink more tea, you live longer. Now, our quiz today, we're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock and answer three questions each on bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And we have a prize, and it's a two-night stay for two in a four-star hotel in the Ainua Collection. They have a stunning array of hotels dotted across Ireland, so you can choose from any one of them. Kilkenny's chic Hibernian Hotel, Dundalk's Fairways Hotel, Tullamore Court Hotel, Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan, or any of the Radisson Blue Hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. There is something for everyone to enjoy, from overnight getaways and spa treatments to elegant afternoon tea or a delicious meal in one of the many restaurants across the iNUA collection. The choice is yours, iNUA.ie, iNUA.ie. So we're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock, bit of a chat, answer a couple of questions, maybe win a prize. And here's your qualifying question for today, Wednesday. What Irish Music Festival makes its return at Stradbally this weekend? Is it Electric Picnic or Electric Lunch? Which Irish Music Festival makes its return at Stradbally this weekend? Is it Electric Picnic or Electric Lunch? 0818 715 925. 0818 715 925. And good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Oh, that was a short break. Caught us by surprise. Sitting in front of me is Brian Lloyd, who is movie editor of entertainment.ie. And Brian Lloyd has been on an adventure, a mission, a quest.
Yes.
For the last 4 years, Brian, is it?
Yeah, well, yeah, 4 years, yeah. I suppose, when you say it now, it exactly is 4 years.
And it culminated this morning.
It did.
Your story of the last 4 years should be a movie, but it's about a movie.
It's about a movie, yeah. It's about the quest to see Michael Flatley's directorial debut, Blackbird.
Right.
So the story starts in 2018 when this was first announced in the Irish Independent. Like everybody else, I saw it and thought, Michael Flatley's directing? And you're thinking, okay, right, you know, there are other dancers who've gone on to become directors. Gene Kelly, obviously. Kenny Ortega, you know, plenty of examples of it. But to see him directing like what looked like a James Bond knockoff was a bit strange. And then you saw the poster and then it got even stranger. And then you saw the plot and it just got even stranger again.
So you were intrigued, like all of us were. We were all intrigued.
Of course, yeah, absolutely. Like, it's like, really? Michael Flatley can do that?
I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I need the details here, because you're an expert on this.
Sure. I was saying to the producer, I'm known for this.
You are the world expert.
Apparently so, yeah. It's odd. It's an odd thing to be, I'm getting a bit sweaty now thinking about that, but yeah, I probably am, yeah.
Brian Lloyd, and your chosen category and your specialist topic is Blackbird by Michael Flatley. Your 2 minutes start now. No, so he wrote, directed, produced, starred in and financed.
Yes.
Is that all correct?
That's all correct.
It's a one-man show.
And like, this is the thing about this, is that if he pulls this off and this becomes a critical darling, Orson Welles, Kevin Costner, they've all done that. They've all wrote, directed, starred, produced, self-financed. It's, again, very, very common.
Not that common, really.
It's been done before. But if he doesn't pull this off and this isn't the critical darling that he thinks it will be, this will join the ranks of Tommy Wiseau's The Room. And if you don't know what The Room is considered to be one of the worst, if not the worst film ever made.
Right.
There was a film recently made about it, The Disaster Artist.
I saw that. So that's a movie about the making of a movie.
The making of The Room, which is considered to be the worst film ever made.
You're going to write the script for the movie about the making of the Blackbird.
I mean, this is it. Like, I mean, if people are listening, they want to. If Michael Flatley wants to make a film, I'm here. Give me a call.
This is the thing. And you've tried to talk to him over the last 4 years. You've used every avenue that you could think of.
I did, yeah. Like, I mean, when this was first announced, I called, and they can all attest to this, I hounded every single film distributor in the country, contacted all the PR agencies, tried to find out who was releasing it, did they have a copy of it, was there going to be... Because like the normal route, as it were, is poster is announced, then there's a trailer. A couple of months after that, then you might get another trailer, then a couple of months after that, then you'll get the press screening or the premiere or something like that. There was a massive gap between when the poster was first announced and then just there was years of radio silence on this.
But there was intrigue as well.
Oh, complete.
Tell us some of the stories. So there was a showing of it at a festival
there
in
were
London,
three,
for example.
Yeah.
Three showings.
There were three showings of it that I'm aware of, right? The first one was a cast and crew screening, which again is not that unusual. Mm. That was done in the Stella. Then there was another screening in London at the Raindance Film Festival, and there was a journalist there from the Hollywood Reporter.
Back in 2018.
This is like 2018-ish, 2018 going into 2019. There was a journalist there from the Hollywood Reporter, which if you don't know, the Hollywood Reporter is like a trade Bible. It's everything. There was a journalist there who was there to review it and watch it. He was basically told an hour before he was due to go in that your invitation is being rescinded. You're not going to see this. In other words, 300 to 400 people went to see this film and nobody talked about it afterwards. There was no...
Nobody broke silence.
Which, Ray, you have to understand, that is unheard of. That doesn't happen. That does not happen in this industry at all. Normally, like if there's even test screenings or something like that.
There's a leak.
There's a leak. Someone will talk about it. Someone will say, oh yeah, I saw that. I heard that's pretty good. You'll hear something about it. This, again, between the cast and crew screening, this screening in London, to hear nothing about it online is unheard of.
I have to keep going back to your story. Yeah. I love your story because you're like a dog with a bone.
I was after this.
You got onto his PA.
Everything.
You got onto various producers who may have worked on it or did work on it.
I even got talking to people who had actually seen the film and would not speak to me. They would only speak to me on condition of anonymity. That's how kind of intrigue laden this was. It didn't get me any close to actually seeing the film, but I mean, I talked to them, interviewed them all. They said, look, don't mention my name, but yes, I did see it. I was at one of those screenings. I will tell you what I thought of it. Here's what I thought of it. Right. They told me, like, you know, it's X, Y, and Z.
I just better just fill people in because the intrigue continues, because although you saw it this morning, you have signed
an NDA.
An NDA?
Yeah.
So what? You can't talk about it?
I can't talk about it until 10 o'clock this evening.
So you can bring us right up to walking in the doors of the cinema, but you have to stop there.
And I should say, like, as well, like, another part of this as well is the press screening was packed. And I'm doing this nearly 10 years. That's never happened. Well, no, it's not that it's never happened. It's unusual.
It's rare,
it is very, very rare. I mean, I know people who weren't even journalists that somehow managed to sneak in there. That'll tell you.
Okay.
Right. Because there is that much excitement about this, you know?
So this is from IMDb. The description of the movie. Michael Flatley, Victor Blackley is his name, is a troubled secret agent known as Blackbird, who abruptly retires from service and opens a luxurious nightclub in the Caribbean to escape the dark shadows of his past. An old flame arrives and reignites love in his life, but she brings danger with her. Some years ago in Eastern Europe, secret agent Victor Blackley is at a hotel with his girlfriend Vivian when he gets a phone to meet his partner Nick outside a local square, disguised as a clown. Is that Michael Flatley?
No, I don't know where you're getting the clown from.
No, there's no clown in it.
No, there's no clown in it at all.
No, but there's a picture of Michael Flatley as a clown.
Yeah, but like that picture apparently is on his Instagram that he did some photo shoot or something.
I don't know. So there's no clown in the movie?
There's no clown in the movie.
Okay.
I can say, he does say though, and I hope I'm not breaking any, I hope he's not going to kill me for saying this. He does say, shall we dance?
Right.
Because he's a dancer.
Yes.
And his film production company is called Dance Lord Pictures as well.
Okay.
There you go. But he doesn't dance in it. Well, he does dance in it, actually. No,
he does dance in it.
Yeah.
He does dance in it, right. You've seen it. You can't talk about it because there's an embargo.
I'm skirting it now. And
the last thing I want to do, Brian, is get you in trouble.
Please don't. Because, like, I was cycling to this and I was like, my God, what if I, like, get bumped off before I get there? What if I die and I don't get to see this? This was all in my head this morning. It's been a very big day for me.
I can see it. The adrenaline rush is still there.
I only just, like, before I came here, I just filed my review, like, so.
Right.
Yeah, it's been a lot. It's actually, I'm a bit emotional about it because, like, I, in all honesty, like, I had kind of set myself right. There were, like, a couple of things I wanted to do in my career, and I got to do a few of them. One of them was to get to see Blackbird before I retire. So this is, like, it's a big day, like.
Yeah, and the trailer was out back in June, was it? June or July?
Yeah, June, July, yeah. And that came out of nowhere as well. Yeah. That was literally, the publicist rang me up. I was literally I've just bought a house and I was painting it all up or whatever, and the publicist rang me and he says, are you working today? And I was like, oh yeah, I am. Yeah, well, I'm just kind of pottering around the place. What's up? Be on your email in the next 30 minutes. I was like, okay, grand. And then it was like, Blackbird is released September 2nd. Michael Flatley's directorial debut. Okay.
Has this been strategic, or has it been a comedy of errors?
That's a very good question. I don't know. I honestly don't know. Well, I'll put it to you this way. This Saturday, for example, is National Cinema Day. So cinema tickets are going to be €4 for the weekend, or for National Cinema Day. So anyone who's listening to this and they're thinking, God, that sounds absolute muck. That is your opinion. That's not my opinion. Yeah. I haven't stated my opinion.
They couldn't have made that decision on what we've said so far.
No, of course. But, I mean, if people decide to go see this, it's only going to cost them €4 on a Saturday. So that's a very, very canny move on his part. Is it a comedy of errors? I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. Like, he's had very good people advising him because he had meetings with the China Film Group. And if you don't know what the China Film Group are, in China is the second biggest box office in the world. And there's only one film company that are allowed to import films. So he met with them in 2018, had a meeting with them about Blackbird to try to get it released into the Chinese film market. So he's got canny people advising him. I don't know. I don't know if it's a comedy of errors. I don't know if this was all just...
Of course, in the middle of it, in fairness to him, there was COVID.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, that's very, very true. But again, you know, he could have sold this to Netflix. He could have sold this to Amazon. He could this could have been on Prime Video. I mean, he could have released this and streamed it if he wanted to. My point is, he could have released this at any point that he wanted to. He chose not to.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's the mystery for me, is why did he not?
But part of his genius, if it, and it is genius, is his control of things.
Oh yeah, totally, yeah. Like, I mean,
Lord of the Dance, he was over everything.
100%. Yes. And this is...
He's over everything on this as well, I would imagine.
100%, yeah. I mean, like, as I said, he wrote it, he directed it, he's the main star in it. He self-financed it. It was his film company that did it. I mean, yeah, it was... Yeah. Some might say that's egomaniacal, I don't know. But I mean, I do think there is people in the film industry who just want control over everything, and he is definitely one of those people.
Now, as I said, the promo was out, and we played clips at the time. We'll just remind people of some of the clips from the promo. So this is Michael Flatley as Victor Blackley. His spy name is Blackbird.
Bless me, Father, for I have sinned and I'm about to sin again.
That's a good line.
That is a good line.
Not as good as this one.
Who I am is none of your concern. And what I do is out of your control.
Good line.
It's a good line.
That's a good line.
Yeah.
Like, it's real, like, action-packed kind of, like, you know, what I do is
sound
none of your control. Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah. Trailer speak. Yeah. No, it's... Again, he's had very, very canny people advising him. Like,
what age is he now?
That's a good question. I want to say he's in his 50s.
Right. Late 50s, probably.
Possibly. So, I haven't a clue. We'll have to...
We looked that up. Let's just... He's 64.
Wow.
There you go.
Well, I tell you what, he's looking fresh for 64 anyway.
But then this was shot in 2016.
So he would have been 61.
He was 58.
He was 58. There you go. Like, I'm like, look, I'm a film critic. I'm not a maths guy. Like,
no, he wasn't. He was 60. He was 60.
He was 60. Right, there you go.
Okay. So... You have reviewed it. That will appear tomorrow.
On entertainment.ie.
Yeah. I believe he's on The Late Late Show on
he
Friday
is. That's
night.
Confirmed, yeah.
That's confirmed. Oh, no, I don't know. I don't know.
That's what we're all kind of talking about. Yeah, I mean, we were all expecting him. I mean, I didn't get an interview with him. I don't think many of my colleagues got an interview with him. I know the rumour was that he was going to be on The Late Late Show.
Any other rumours? Have you had any other rumours?
He's doing another radio show on Friday morning.
Okay.
But yeah, no, he's not going to
probably
sit for
probably Dempsey Breakfast Show on Today FM. Because, well, there's
a relationship
there.
Named it now. There you
go. But there's
a
relationship there. There's a relationship there.
Is there?
Yeah. How so?
Oh yeah, of course. Yes.
Yes. So imagine Michael Flatley interviewing Michael Flatley.
I can't imagine he'd like that though.
I'd say he would. I'd say he would. Well, why is he doing it if he doesn't like it?
I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So you are currently writing the script of
The Chase for Blackbird.
The Chase for Blackbird.
Yeah. Searching Blackbird. Yeah. Something like that. We're workshopping titles. I don't know. Workshopping titles.
Brian, thanks so much. And. Like, I can't ask you about it. But
I can't tell you.
I can't tell you anything. Yeah.
Have me back. I'll talk about it. Gladly talk about it tomorrow.
I can ask you about your feelings. Like, were you relieved that you finally got to see it?
Yes.
Okay.
My wife is delighted that I've stopped talking about this. My wife is absolutely ecstatic that I've stopped talking about this because she's had to listen to this for 4.5 years.
Right. Brian Lyde from entertainment.ie. Thanks so much for coming in. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we're looking for people to take part in our quiz. 2 people after 4 o'clock. Our qualifying question today is, which Irish music festival makes its return at Stradbally this weekend? Is it Electric Picnic or Electric Lunch? And the number is 0818 715 925. 0818 715 925. And there's Stephen, a text there. He says, in the early 90s, my wife and I and our 4 daughters live between London and Macroom, County Cork. We bought 3 Hoover products, a deep freeze, a dishwasher and a vacuum cleaner, and we received 3 vouchers, which meant the 6 of us got free flights to Florida. We had a 2-week holiday at Disneyland and travelled the East Coast. Some holidays, says Stephen, all courtesy of Hoover. Do you remember that, Maggie Molloy? No, you don't. No. Maggie Molloy is in front of me, as is Kieran McCarthy, and that means that a new series of Cheap Irish Homes returns to RTE. We've spoken to you before, Maggie. Kieran, good to talk to you for the first time.
Thank you.
Maggie, describe the show to people who don't know it.
It's basically me traipsing around rural Ireland looking for houses that are more affordable than the houses you normally see on the TV.
Yes.
And in your newspapers and stuff like that. That's basically it. And then I drag him along
on
the journey.
And it started out from you with a genuine interest because you were looking in it, because you were looking for your own house.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I had an Instagram feed back in the day where I would put up pictures of houses I saw, you know, that were falling down along the roadsides and stuff. And I'd started that when I was looking for my own house because I'd been living in Wexford and couldn't afford to buy anywhere. So you just kind of move down the food chain house-wise till you find something you can afford. And people just genuinely thought I was the only person that had ever gotten a bargain on a house, and I was trying to tell them that this is actually a thing that exists.
There.
They are 100%, yes. Yeah.
But in the intervening years, of course, the average house price has gone up.
They've gone up and down and back up again.
Yes. but at the beginning, I remember talking to you, and you were talking about houses under 100,000 euro.
Yeah.
They're gone up a bit, aren't they?
A bit.
Yeah.
I mean, they're still out there, don't get me wrong, you know, they are, but like. I suppose with the cost of renovations and stuff nowadays and materials and even just the supply chain, the issues we have, just getting people to look at houses that don't need as much renovation isn't the worst idea in the world. It just gives them a bit of an option, and especially people who don't necessarily want to renovate. Like, I was mad for it when I was 23 and buying my house. I was like, I live in a house with no front door, it's fine. But not everybody, I think, is maybe as predisposed
which
to
brings
it.
Us nicely on to, you're sending the message out there that people need to toughen up a bit.
A bit.
Go on.
Yeah, and we're a bit soft, to be fair. We're a bit soft. Like,
when,
a lot of the houses...
When it comes to what?
When it comes to where we can live comfortably. I think that's one of the things, like, a lot of the houses myself and Kieran see are houses that older people have lived in up until maybe 5 years ago. You're talking people in their 80s are living quite comfortably in them. They've gotten the grants for the wet room and the mobility aids and the ramps. And the thing about it is then people our age are way younger, because I'm in my early 40s. So, like, people in their 20s are coming in and looking at the houses and going, I couldn't live here, and turning up their nose at them. And you're like, our most vulnerable generation
house,
are right now living in these houses. And I think in that respect, we're a bit soft. I think coming in and pulling a house apart that someone in their 80s has lived in up until a couple of months ago is, I think it's kind of naive, and it's costing people a fortune.
So you need to toughen up. Kieran, so what's your story? You're obviously a builder. Yeah. And you had your own little pet project, had you, that you were looking at buildings and looking at them being renovated? And
yeah, so I mean, I'm an engineer and builder, so I've renovated many old houses in Cork and built new houses as well. So I've seen every different type of house. Back in the day, I came across Michael Lynch in Cork, and he'd come across Maggie and her Instagram channel, and which was blowing up at the time, and the idea of to make a show out of the whole the cheap Irish houses. So Michael and RTE needed an engineer as a voice of reason, so that Maggie wouldn't run completely away with herself. So here
you
I am.
Were you doing YouTube stuff before this? No.
Yeah, I was doing some YouTube
sort of advice,
YouTube videos and whatever. Yeah, and funny enough, I have a podcast coming out on that basis in October.
Right.
But yeah, so I was doing kind of information videos on how to renovate houses, how to build new houses, and tips for people building a house and everything else. So yeah, I was a voice of reason.
Yeah, well, be the voice of reason then for the next few minutes and tell us, what mistakes do people make? Because I can see it in watching these programmes that when people arrive at the house and it's probably their first purchase, they're getting on the ladder, they get excited, very excited, and maybe are blinded in some ways by that excitement.
Well, I suppose there's a big spectrum. There's kind of a long answer to that, because like when Maggie and I look at houses, I'm more of a fan of paying a little bit more for a house that's in better condition, because if you spend less, you could spend a fair bit with a builder or a tradesman and buying materials and everything else, which we know has gone up a lot now lately. So if you can buy a house, spend more and get a house in better condition, because you'll save not having to do that building work yourself. You'll save time, you'll save money, and the heartache and stress and the uncertainty of it. So I'm much more a fan of doing that. Like, as Maggie and I often say, like, phase the works as well, because you needn't just jump in and spend all the money day one, because you'll probably end up spending it in the wrong place. I mean, some people rush in and put in the new windows, but maybe the boiler is on the way out, and, you know, spending it on the boiler first, which means you're going to have warm heat for the next winter, you can do the windows year two or maybe year three. So phase your money a little bit. If you have a little bit of a bigger budget and you're looking to knock down walls and make it, you know, change the layout of the house a little bit, it's good to live in the house a little bit first, because even though, like, we moved house, a year ago, nearly today, And even though I'm used to looking at architects' drawings all day long in my business, we lived in the house during the lockdown before we moved, and we got a sense of small little nuances and even just the connection to the garden
and the functionality of it.
Yeah, yes. Small little things that really make a difference when you actually go to change it. So don't rush. And as Maggie says, you know, there's nothing wrong with spending a year in it and just roughing it a small bit and learning a bit about it. You know.
And people come to you a little bit delusional because they're looking for a house in Wicklow or Kildare, say. And cheap houses probably aren't that common in those counties.
No, I mean, if you go out in a one county radius around Dublin, it's heartbreaking, as is Dublin, you know. I mean, Leinster in general, I would rarely see houses in, rarely, you know. So what you need to be doing if you're looking for a house there is you need to be spending the majority of the money on the house and very little on the renovation. So that's one of those kind of areas where you genuinely have to get in and rough it in a house. If the bank is willing to give you the money to buy the house without giving you anything else on top of it, just get in and start living there.
And things have changed, of course, because of the pandemic, because more people are working from home. At one stage, I think there were queues around the corner for houses in Carlow, where people who were from Carlow worked in Dublin, now returning home because they could work from home. Has that pushed prices up in counties even further away from Dublin?
I think definitely, like, people coming home during pandemic times, you know, it's not even just remote working. It's people who were living up here and were very much, you know, bedded down for the next 10 years. And they were thinking, we'll retire to Mayo, we'll retire back to the West, are just going, do you know what? Life's too short. We're just going back. And I think that's made a bit. It's not just, you know, random Dublin people moving out into rural Ireland. It is also, you know, rural Irish people coming
returning,
home. Yes. Yeah, because, like, we've been basically filling up Dublin for the last 200 years as well. It's not just them. We're all kind of back and forward. Yeah, yeah. And I think definitely, I mean, rural Ireland has gotten a really, really big insurgence of excitement. Okay. And, you know, and we needed that. Yes. I think we really did.
So where are the bargains to be got still? Name the counties.
Well, I would definitely go northwest.
Okay.
Northwest
Leitrim,
Roscommon, up there, you know. If you want to live in a coastal county and you want to live in it affordably, I would say Clare, Mayo, Donegal, fantastic value. I mean, obviously, you're not going to be moving to Belmullet.
Why not?
No, it's just, it's too expensive.
Oh, that's it?
Oh, yeah, no offence to Belmullet people.
It's expensive.
Yeah, I mean, resort towns, anywhere that has any kind of a little, I suppose, gimmick about it or a novelty about it back in the day. So, like, you couldn't move to Kilkee and Clare and expect to get a €50,000 house or plus. You know, so this, it's the same in all of them, like Bundoran and places like that. You have to get outside of them. A lot of the time when people think Donegal, they think Bundoran. Yes. And it's like, no, there's way more to Donegal.
In the first episode, you have Laura, who works in the civil service, does a bit of influencing, and she wants to return to within an hour of the family home place in Carlow. Mm. And you bring her out with her mother, Lily, who's great. The voice of reason as well, Kieran.
Yeah.
Double aspect, she said at one stage. Look at the lovely double aspect.
She was great.
But one of the houses you brought her, and this, I want to talk a little bit about this, is it's a sort of accommodation over a shop in Hackettstown.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of talk about main streets in Irish towns and how they've, you know, been sort of, the blood has been sucked out of them because businesses have shut down. Mm-hmm. Surely a way to rejuvenate them is to repurpose them as residential.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
and how easy is that to do?
Well, they've had a change in planning laws recently where back in the day, I wouldn't even say back in the day, like 2 years ago, if you wanted to convert a shop back into living accommodation, you had to get planning permission for a change of use on the building. And they've laxed that a lot now, which means it's a way of kind of encouraging people to just come back in and turn these back into, I suppose, dwelling houses. And they're huge houses.
Yeah.
They're fantastic. And the people that owned them over the past 100 years were people with money. They were the people who had the money to keep them warm, to keep them upgraded, maintained. It's not like going out into a little vernacular cottage where someone could have been struggling for 50 years. Like, these were people that had the means to keep the houses in good condition. They're a fantastic bargain. If you can figure out how you would live in one yourself, like, you're talking 3-story townhouse on top of commercial space. That's huge.
Yeah.
It's massive, massive.
You've great access to services as well in these towns. I mean, they're not quite the same as cities, but I mean, you have a lot of access to services. And, like, there's grants for vacant and derelict properties outside of the main cities or whatever as well. So on top of the SAI grants. So, I mean, there's grants available for a fair amount of this work, and they really stack up. You you look through them, you know.
Yeah. Do you sense that people are looking at it differently? Because we are in the middle of a housing crisis and the pandemic got us to look at the world differently, our lives, where we live, how we work, all those sort of things. And there's a knock-on effect, is there? Do you get a sense of that? Like even Laura, like her returning to Carlow.
Yeah, and I think people are looking at these houses. I mean, look, before we started talking about these houses in general a couple of years ago, they were always an option. It's just people didn't know about them. Now, there isn't necessarily another option hidden in back pocket for like a couple of years' time when all these are lived in. But I genuinely think young people now are a lot more positive about the idea of living in these houses because they genuinely look at them and they go, this is where my granny lived. Like, I love a house like this. And we see this a lot on the show where Kieran will have like these grand ideas about knocking into open plan space and a house under will come in and just go, this reminds me of my granny's house. I love it exactly the way it is. You forget that like our generation grew up with these houses being somewhere that was a very joyful place.
Well, it's coincidental, but in the middle of the show you go to Rachel in Rathangan, who bought a cottage.
Oh yeah, that was fantastic.
That's exactly the same as the house I was brought up in.
Really?
Yeah, because obviously Kildare County Council had an architect and they had this blueprint of a house and they built them all over County Kildare.
Yeah, rinse and repeat. Yeah.
So 11 of us were brought up in the house that I got.
Wow. That's lovely. It's nice. And you know, her house again, when she went into it, was granny wallpaper, flowery carpets and all stuff like that. She could have come in and spent an absolute fortune. Her house was probably the one I was most surprised with out of everybody's. She spent an...
Yeah, but it's a bit not fair because I spotted on her bookshelf books on art and design, and you know, so she is a type of person.
She is, and I mean, I was walking around her house and I was thinking, I wouldn't have had the vision. I'd be fairly creative and I wouldn't have had that. She's like, her sheds were full of, Kieran hasn't seen this, her sheds were full of festival art that she does for like things like Electric Picnic and stuff like that. You know, it's mad, like, she's so creative.
It's worth watching. So it's Thursday, tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. Cheap Irish Homes returns. And I was just reading that 166,752 vacant houses and apartments, according to the last year's census, the current census.
Yeah.
That's a lot of vacant.
It's scandalous. Yeah. It's absolutely scandalous. The grants that have come in are a step in the right direction, though. So we can't, you know, having grants there so that people who take on vacant houses get 25,000 or whatever the figure is, then if the house is also classed as derelict, you get more money. This is the kind of thing
you can be... it's not for everybody, you know.
Is a big help. Yeah. This is a massive help.
Like, it is a big help. I mean, I'd be more for... I'd say, like, there are some houses out there that Maggie and I have seen that are in remarkably good condition. I mean, some of them, you know, there have about 25% are in nearly walk-in condition.
Yeah.
We've seen houses with, on the first series, with external insulation, which is, you know, the best way to insulate a house. So some of them are really, really good. Now, some of them require a lot more work, but I mean, there are real bargains out there. Like, you'll spend more when the house is in better condition and closer to broadband and urban links or whatever. But it's just kind of gauging it between that side of it and you know, being a bit further away from that and getting a bit more, you spend more or less, but, you know, you have a bit more innovation part to do, I suppose. Yeah.
Do you, when you're driving from one house to the other, have chats about the housing crisis and if you were the Minister for Housing, what you would do or not? You don't have those chats.
We don't have chats about them together, but I have chats about them a lot, even in my own head. It's just, it's something, there has to be a solution. I feel like there just has to be something that can be done that isn't what we're doing right now. You know, I mean, like, even the grants that came in for these vacant houses are aimed at villages and towns because there were too many derelict houses out in actual rural Ireland for them to encompass everything, and they would have had to give away too much money. So basically, if you want to live looking out over a field, which is what rural Ireland to me is, you don't get a penny. And that's a massive thing. Like, a huge, massive amount of my followers on Instagram alone were totally left out of that grant process because you're not living in a town. And a town isn't for everybody. Like, you're reared in the countryside, it's not easy to just be shoved into a town, you know?
But the only thing is, like, I mean, to be fair, like, I live in Cork. There's an awful lot of focus on Dublin, to a lesser extent Cork, to Waterford and Limerick and whatever you. And like these towns and cities are congested. Like, and like, we've been through some plenty of rural towns, and these towns are really suffering. Like, these towns need a little bit more, whether it's tax incentives.
I know, but if you're brought up and reared in Dublin, you want to stay in Dublin. You know, that's and a lot of more jobs are in Dublin. You know, anyway, that's a bigger discussion. Anyway, tomorrow night you will see Laura and her mum Lily looking for a house with, excuse me, within an hour of Carlow, and Maggie Malloy will be there, and Kieran McCarthy, the voice of reason and engineer, will be there as well. It's 7 o'clock on RT1. Thank you very much. Thank you both for coming
in.
Thank you. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
A few big weekends in music, and the biggest one, I suppose, is this weekend. The first time since 2019, thousands of revellers are preparing to return to Electric Picnic in Stradbally. It's back, bigger than ever, along with a new and improved main stage, a new theatre area, new installations. The festival is getting a whole new area called Fishtown. And it's been created and built by hand by the man himself, Jerry Fish. How are you doing, Jerry?
Oh, good, Ray. Fishtown. I like the way you say it. We'll have to sample that and use it in the app.
Yeah. Good to talk to you. So I was reading the Irish Times today, and there's various people quoted there. There's a lot of excitement around the return of Electric Picnic. It's more than just a festival this year for people, isn't it, Jerry?
It's 3 years. I don't think we really know how we feel, you know what I mean? But like, this is the biggest party that happens in Ireland. There's 70,000 people come here. So I think it will be quite emotional, sure.
Yeah.
You know.
And you've been part of it. You're part of the fabric of Electric Picnic.
I've been here since the beginning, since the very first picnic, and it's grown. I have the Jerry Fish Electric Sideshow tent here, which is a mix of circus and alternative music.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I basically curate the tent and I bring circus people in between bands. And now Melvin has given me an area called Fishtown. So now I have a bar called the Heart and Anchor.
Right.
Like, yeah. So we've been planning it for the last, it was supposed to be here in 2021. So I built a big bar called the Heart and Anchor, as I said. We've got a little fire. We've got lovely seating areas. We've got three sideshow stages. Small theatres around. There's one with a piano on it, so pianists are welcome. You can entertain us.
Right.
And that's it. The big circus tent is in the woods, so it looks like it's a spaceship, actually. It looks like, how did it get there? I mean, I'm even bewildered as to how it got there.
Yeah.
And I'll be performing on Sunday around 8 o'clock, so there's a great act there. It should be amazing.
And you, there's a bit of a ringmaster about you. You love the theatre of it all. It's not just about music.
I do, you know, I think the rock and roll circus, I guess, you know, as you know, I was in a band since 1989,
yeah.
Emotional Fish, and we got to tour with some of the greatest freaks in the world, the Ramones and the Cramps and the Pixies and everyone else, Nirvana. So, you know, I guess I'm in love with rock and roll, but then I guess with the Mudbug Club, I experienced more theatrical thing. I like to write, and I actually love to build, right? So I really enjoyed.
So you built the bar yourself?
I built the bar along with friends. We had an artist called Susan. So Steve Simpson is the artist behind it.
Right.
I mean, I released a colouring book there a few years ago because we were doing a kids' festival. I like to do different things.
Yeah.
But yeah, now I was a painter and decorator when I was younger, so I kind of grew up on building sites, and I seem to be back. I don't know if I'm going in reverse.
I think it's the last sort of chapter in the return to normality, isn't it? Electric Picnic, and I see the organizer was saying he sometimes forgets how to spell COVID because it's in the distant past. So it's
amazing how quickly we forget. Go on, sorry.
No. So it is. There's no restrictions whatsoever. It's as it was.
It is, yeah, and I think, I think life is, though, isn't it? And people kind of, we're careful, but I think, yeah, no, we need to, we have a vaccine, and it obviously works.
Oh, yes.
You know what I mean? We're very lucky.
Yeah.
And we're very lucky in this country. So, yeah, it's time to party. It's important, right? How much have we been talking about mental health, you know? And the reason, you've got to let it off steam, you know what I mean? And that's, Electric Picnic is really about that. It's just, you know, mums, dads, kids, it's everybody, you know. It's just amazing.
And as a veteran of the festival, Jerry, before we let you go, what advice do you have for people who are heading down there, the 70,000 people?
Well, basically, you're going to a four-night party, so pace yourself. That's very simple, really.
Right.
You know what I mean? If you're going to anything, pace yourself. You know, don't go crazy the first night and it's all over.
Yes. You know, that's really good advice. Good sound advice from from Daddy Jerry. Okay.
No help the park. Yeah.
So Fishtown, visit Fishtown when you're in Stradbally at Electric Picnic. Jerry, always good to talk to you. Hopefully we'll see you live in studio and you'll sing us a song sometime soon. Thanks, Jerry.
I definitely will. Come along and have a beer.
Right, good luck. See you. Bye. Bye. Gramago Seamus, thank you very much. On Jerry Fish to 51551. We recently had Jerry Fish in our Elderly Day service in Goree as part of the Mobile Music Machine. He was an absolute gentleman and wowed everyone with his singing, Bernie and Goree. He's a great entertainer, is Jerry Fish. The Bookmarket Cafe is looking forward to hosting Jerry Fish in Kells September 17th. Nearly booked out. Tickets still available. The Bookmarket Cafe in Kells. Okay, it's time for our quiz. Press the button. Yes, there you go. Two quizzers lined up and one will win a prize. And this week, it's a two-night stay in any Ainua hotel. And they have a great collection of hotels all over the country. In Hibernian Hotel in Kilkenny, the Fairways Hotel in Dundalk, Tullamore Court Hotel, Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan, and any of the Radisson Blue Hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. Ainua.ie, Ainua.ie for more information. Michael Farrell, how are you doing, Michael?
How are you, Ray? How are things?
Good. You're in Ballymahon in Longford.
Yeah.
Famous for three things. I'll start again. Famous for three things.
Yeah, go on.
Go on, you go on.
Famous for three things. Oh, I suppose Centre Parks is the first one that's there at the moment.
Ka-ching!
We have a wide street.
A wide, yes, ka-ching! That's the second one. What's the third one?
Oh, myself, I suppose.
Well, I was thinking Maura Higgins.
All right, yeah, Maura, yeah. I know Maura.
There's the three things, isn't it? The wide street, Centre Parks, and Maura Higgins. That's Ballymahon and Longford for you. So it's wide and long and straight, the street, isn't it?
It is indeed. It is indeed. Yeah.
Does it hold any records, Michael? Do you know?
I'm not 100% sure.
No.
I think maybe Strokestown might be a little bit wider, so it might be the second widest street in Ireland.
Right. Right, or even in Connacht, yeah, or in whatever.
Leinster,
sorry, I know Longford's in Leinster and Roscommon is in Connacht. So, you're on the road today and you know the geography of Ireland because you're driving all over Ireland.
I'm coming from Sligo today. I left Ballymahon earlier on to go to Sligo and I'm on the way from Sligo now to Dublin to collect my daughter from the airport.
Aha, and where has she been?
She has been in France with her uncle and his family.
Right. On holidays or work or what?
Oh, yeah, sorry, holidays. Yeah,
holidays, yeah. And she's one of five daughters?
She is the second youngest, five daughters.
Okay, yeah. And what's the age range?
The age range is from 22 to 8.
Wow. Yeah, and all girls?
All girls.
How is that for you?
Great.
Yeah.
That's about the height of it now.
That's all you're getting to do. That's all you're getting.
Yeah. You can take it from that now on, like.
So one national school, one secondary, three in college.
And all going well.
All going well. Great. And you're a firefighter for the last 20 years?
Yeah, nearly 20 years now, a firefighter.
And based where?
Based in the town of Ballymahon, yeah.
Right, okay. Right, you're up against Sive Ellick from West Cork. Hello, Sive.
Hiya.
How are things?
I'm good. I'm actually from Cork City, but I'm in West Cork right now.
Okay, whereabouts in West Cork?
So I'm in a caravan in Alahees on the coast.
Oh, Alahees. I love Alahees.
Yeah, it's gorgeous here.
You're getting the weather, are you?
Oh, it's a bit too hot. You can have a bit of sunburn.
Yeah. And you can just nip out and go to the... We're getting... Are you on a hands-free or something there? Have you got a radio?
No,
have you got a radio on in the background, Sive?
No.
I can hear myself back for some reason. It's a bit odd. Maybe it's the West Cork weather is interfering with us. So you can nip out. There's a lovely beach there, isn't there? The Alahees, yeah. You're on the Ring of Beara. Do you holiday there regularly?
I haven't been here since I was a little kid, actually. But the caravan belongs to my mum. She's been down all summer and I've only just made it down now myself. So.
Uh-huh. And what do you do back in Cork?
So I was working in retail, but I've just finished up in that job and I'm finishing up a master's thesis before I look for a new job.
Okay, and what's the master's thesis on?
It's in film and screen media.
Aha. Uh-huh. Right. So
hopefully it'll help me with the quiz, yeah.
Yeah, so your ambition is to work in that industry?
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
What specifically?
Well, I did my BA in English, so I'd be kind of into writing more about film than making the movies, you know?
Uh-huh, right, okay. Yeah. We were talking about Madonna earlier on. Are you a fan?
Yeah, I was just saying I liked watching her in Body of Evidence in the 90s.
Right. I can't remember seeing that.
It was with Willem Dafoe. It was kind of a weird courtroom drama / erotic fiction.
Right. Okay. Was she good in it?
I thought so. It was a fun little okay. film to watch, yeah.
Okay. So hopefully your studies will help you, as you say, in the quiz. Three questions each. If you go for a long clip, you get 1 point. Go for a shorter clip, it's more difficult. Michael and Sive. And whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. If it's a draw in points, we go to a tie-break situation. Okay, good luck to you both. Michael and Sive, here we go. Right, Michael, to you first. The year is 1992. Which is exactly 30 years ago, when we're starting at the movies. Do you want to go long or short?
Oh, look, it will go short.
Right, okay.
Go big or go home.
Oh, yeah, right. This 1992 film stars Whoopi Goldberg as a nightclub singer who is forced to take refuge from the mob in a convent. Can you name the movie? Here's your short clip.
You will draw no attention to yourself whatsoever. As from now and until you leave, you are Mary Clarence.
Well...
Sister Act.
Is correct. 2 points for you. Good start from Michael Farrell in Ballymahan. Sive Ellick in West Cork from Cork City. 1992 movies. Do you want to go long or short?
I'll go short as well, please.
Short as well. This is your area of expertise. No pressure. This film saw superstar Whitney Houston take on the role of an R&B singer who needs protection from a Secret Service agent. Can you name the movie? Here's your short clip.
And You're Ready to Die for Me.
It's the job.
And you do it?
Can't sing.
Well?
It's The Bodyguard?
It is. And that was Kevin Costner there, second mentioned today. And of course, the song from that was I Will Always Love You, Whitney Houston's version of the Dolly Parton song. You got 2 points. Back to you, Michael. And music it is from 1992, long or short?
Oh, we better keep going short.
Short it is. This song was released by the father of a very famous American singer who went on to make a name for herself as both an actor and a musician. Can you name the artist or the song? Here's your short clip.
You can tell the world you never was my girl. You can burn my clothes when I'm gone.
Well.
The bold Billy Ray Cyrus.
Yeah, there you go. You probably did line dancing to it.
Down in Nijinsky's many moons ago.
There you go. Down in Nijinsky's, there's a blast in the past. Okay, 2 points for you. Sive, music from 1992. What do you think?
Yeah, if it's not country, I think I'll be all right.
Right, okay. So you're going short, are you?
Yeah, short, please.
So this romantic single reached the charts in 1992, but can you name either the song or the band? Here's your short clip.
Close your eyes, but don't forget what you have heard.
Who's that?
I'm sorry, I have no idea.
Name of the song, no.
No.
No. That was Take That, A Million Love Songs.
No,
yeah. Doesn't ring a bell. Still don't know it. Okay. Now, so Michael, you're in a strong position here. You're on four, Sive's on two. If you get anything from this last question, Sive can't catch you. Okay?
All right.
So it's news and current affairs from 1992. Do you want to go long or short?
Oh, look, we'll go along this time, so we'll make a time in our hands.
Okay, fair enough. Ireland won the Eurovision in 1992. It was the first of what would be three consecutive wins for the country. Can you name the singer? Long clip.
There was a wave to the fans before moving inside to meet family and friends.
At what point did you think you had it wrong?
Whenever the final vote was gone.
So a little clip at the end. Can you name that singer?
Linda Tracy?
No. Nope. So close. It is Linda, but it's not Tracy. It's Martin.
Linda Mark.
Why me, says you. Okay, so you're on four. Sive, you're on two. If you go short and get it right, it brings us to a tie-break situation. So what do you want to do?
Yeah, I'll go short, so.
Okay. In 1992... This Dublin man took home the boxing welterweight title, making it Ireland's first Olympic gold medal in 36 years. What was his name? And here's your short clip.
The hardest fight in my life. He was a great puncher. He was a good technician. And the plan worked out.
Who's that?
Yeah, again, sport, not a clue. So
no, no.
Couldn't even hear it very well, but yeah. I wouldn't know anyway.
You wouldn't know anyway. Michael Carruth. It was Michael Carruth. Okay, Sive, lovely talking to you. We're going to send you down a couple of Red Arty Show mugs, one for you and one for your mum. You can leave them in the caravan in Alahees. Be nice there. And good luck with the Masters, and good talking
lovely,
to you.
Thank you.
See you, Sive. Enjoy the rest of your holiday. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Michael, well done.
Yeah, a bit slipped up there with that Linda Martin one.
Yes,
I should have known that one.
Well, sure, there you go. You're one anyway, and you're going to an iNua hotel, iNua.ie. You can look up which one you want to choose from and drive safely, collecting Leah from the airport. Mind yourself.
I will indeed.
Okay.
I will indeed. Thanks
see
very
you
much,
Michael.
Now.
Good bye now.
Have
bye.
A good day.
Yeah,
cheers.
You
bye
too.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, 51551. We're going to meet Tracy Flynn and Niamh Gogan. Who are parents and put together a lovely little book called The A to Z of Minding Me, Positive Affirmations to Help You Feel Good Every Day. We're going to be talking to them after a bit of Harry Styles.
Maybe we can find a place to feel good, and we can treat people with kindness, find a place to feel good.
I got been dreaming, dropping into the deep end.
bells and treat people with kindness, which leads nicely into our next item. It's a big week for children right across the country as many start school for the first time ever. And although there may be lots of excitement, there may also be some nerves too. Joining me today are the authors behind a new book, especially for children. It's The A to Z of Minding Me. Tracy Flynn and Niamh Gogan, good afternoon. Congratulations on the book. So let's find out why you're qualified to write this book. It's aimed at children, Tracy. So describe it to our listeners.
The book, well, absolutely. Yeah. So I says I'm a primary school teacher, as you know, and a mum as well. So I'll just give us a little background on myself and Niamh. Myself and Niamh met when I was teaching, and I was lucky enough to teach Niamh's two children in school. And myself and Niamh worked on different projects together in the classroom, and we soon realised we were very similar in our parenting styles. And I suppose the thing we had in common was the use of powerful, positive language and how effective that was. So I, since I've left the school and I'm in a new setting, myself and Niamh remained friends.
Yeah, we kept in touch.
We kept in touch, yeah. And from that then, we kept coming back to the idea of, you know, how powerful it was to talk to children with positive language. And I suppose since then, the book has evolved and grown, and here we are today.
Yeah. Yeah, we said we'd love to do like a creative collaboration together of sorts, and the book kind of fell out of that. And it was always about the power of positive language with children and empowering them to recognise that within themselves they have these unique skills and abilities and to unlock that. Yes. And how
and the brilliant thing about the book is that it's in children's language.
Yes, yes. We were very keen about that.
So, yeah. So this might be the worst description ever of the book, but here I go anyway. It's like a self-help book. For children.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that okay?
No, yeah, absolutely. And what we wanted it to be, we wanted every child to find something in it and something on every page. And we specifically wrote it from the point of view of the child, using I can on every page, guided by the alphabet, the letters of the alphabet.
Yes.
Because we wanted the children to read the book. And children everywhere to be able to read the book and be talking to themselves, right, to hear that. And we feel really, really strongly that, you know, if children can recognise all the things, we're not asking children or parents to do anything else or anything more, but just to recognise all the skills they have inside. And then throughout their daily moments in school or home, to hear some of the affirmations, perhaps, I can adapt, I can...
Yes,
giggle.
And, the positive language is really interesting because as parents and as adults, we say things that sort of throw away comments and we don't realise that they can stick, you know.
Yeah.
And one of you gave the example of, you know, Mary, or well, there are very few young Marys around, but say Joanne, or she's very shy. And if Joanne as a 6-year-old continually hears that, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it?
Yeah, Joanne. Children believe what we say to them, and yes, we become their inner narrative. So we definitely wanted to, while it is a children's book, you're right, and it is a children's picture book, it's also a lovely tool for parents to kind of build moments of connection with them.
Yeah.
And we were very aware as well that while it's positive affirmations that children can say to themselves every day to feel good, it's not all positive.
Mm-hmm.
There is definitely, you know, we grew up in an era where you weren't allowed to cry, or, you know,
absolutely,
you get to push your feelings away. And we want to make sure that children and their parents recognise that all feelings are welcome and all feelings belong. And with children, it's really important to kind of name the feeling and to allow them to sit with that feeling.
Yeah.
And to recognise.
Now, this is language that I'm very familiar with from self-help books that I read for the show. And it is this, that feelings aren't facts, and sitting with the feelings, they will pass. It too will pass, and all that. And what I like about the book is that you're saying that, but not in an adult way. So,
absolutely.
And it would be brilliant if we could teach our children that, because as adults, we find it very, very difficult.
And I think you're right, Ray, because we felt like it was really important to do this from an early age to try and build that emotional literacy. Mm-hmm. And we have 3 children between us, and they have slept, bred this whole book in the past 2 years. They have been our little testers. They've been amazing. Mm. But repetition reduces the risk, and it kind of allows children to be curious, and then they become masters in it. And we would notice with our own children already that they themselves start to talk this way, and they recognise, you know, I sense that you're not in a good mood, or, you know.
They say to you.
Yeah,
yeah, it's coming back.
What age are your children?
I have a 12-year-old girl, Poppy, and 10-year-old self, right. So like yourself with Tom.
Yes, and they say, I sense, Mammy, that you're not in good form today.
Yes. Well, on the rare occasion,
how does Mammy react to that? That's interesting.
Mum might say, I can adapt and change and try new things, or I can breathe long and slow. And Kelly is 9.
Yeah, so. I have a daughter who's 9. I have 25 other children that I give back at 2:30 every day in the classroom, who I have a new class this year, and no doubt they will hear the affirmations over and over again. And actually, I was speaking to an adult the other day, and she was at the till and her cards wouldn't work, and she'd read the book and she's like, which can I use? And she chose, I can overcome difficult moments and be okay. Right. So we can all use it. Yeah,
I'm just reading somewhere here, and I can say when I make a mistake.
Yeah,
we're allowed to make mistakes. I can voice how I feel and be seen and heard. These are all the little affirmations here. I can sense all the incredible things around me. I can think about what makes me happy and say thank you. And the illustrations are wonderful. It's just beautiful. A lovely, colourful book.
Thanks to Kerry O'Callaghan, our wonderful illustrator. And we've just,
incredible. We're so lucky to have had her. She's amazing.
We know that every child is going to see themselves in those illustrations and, become a friend to themselves.
A lot of pressure on you two now. Because everyone will be looking to your children, and they must be model children, because
they are, of course, right. They're absolutely the three of them.
Yeah. No, but I think, as Niamh said, the book is about acknowledging difficult moments, big feelings. So yes, it is a very positive book, but we're not saying life is a bed of roses. There are difficult moments, and throughout every day, but it's how we navigate these. And if we can put language, and children can put language on these moments, we, I suppose, go into older years.
Okay,
much
let's
better
role
equipped.
Play a little bit. Right, and either of you can take this up. Mammy, I want a mobile phone.
We're not at that stage.
You're young. I think you can voice how you feel and be seen and heard. So, and you reflect back to them, you're looking for a mobile phone. I'm wondering, why are you looking for a mobile phone? What is it that you want? Why do you want a mobile phone?
All my friends have them.
All your friends have it. So you really want to be the same as all your friends. I'm seeing you've got a really big feeling. You really want to be the same as all your friends.
Yes, I do.
And we know you really do want a phone. And when we've decided that you can have one, you can yippee when positive things happen for you.
Did my daughter get in touch with you before this show? I'm wondering.
But that is a difficult one, isn't it? And I'm sure you hear it because you have a 12-year-old, that everybody else is doing it, whether it's having a mobile phone or going to a certain place or buying a certain pair of runners or whatever.
I think one of the gifts that the book can give is beautiful connection moments for parents with their children. So if it is, I want a phone, that you actually, the child will come and talk to you, and it might be, I can voice what I want and be seen and heard. And then you will talk about that, and you will let the child own that feeling and validate that feeling and, be attuned to them and together agree when is the right time to get a phone. And that the child wasn't just, go away, and it's forgotten.
They're and the same and thing heard, like and acknowledge this, those feelings
and
yeah.
Even this week with children with back to school, our book has been designed so that you can dip in and dip out of it. It's not necessary that you sit down and read it cover to cover, so we hope that it will give parents that chance to have, and their children, little moments of connection. And it might be children coming home and they're exhausted, they're tired, and as parents I've definitely done it, what did you do today, and they go nothing, but instead perhaps it's a 10-minute connection, and it might be that you pick the book up and it's like, I can giggle and feel happy. And instead of saying, what did you do today? You may say, I'm wondering, did anything make you laugh today? Or did anything, make you giggle? The same at nighttime, maybe going to bed, wow and be wonderful. I'm wondering, did you feel wonderful today? So there's loads of lovely opportunities for parents to have a 10-minute connection with their child. And we think that, the children, certainly with our own children, children will show you what they need and what they want. And we find even our own children will be nearly bringing the book to you and, opening a certain page. And as Tracy said, Kerry O'Callaghan has done such a lovely job on the illustrations that there's something for everyone in it. And at different times, different children will want different things as well.
I can dream and dare to be different. That's the D. I can cry and be comforted by someone I trust. Things have changed. Like, I'm a good bit older than you two, but the way you treat your children is different to how your parents treated you, I would imagine. And where does it all end? Because it looks like, as parents, we were definitely cosseting our kids more than we were cosseted. And is that always the best thing to do, I wonder?
Well, I suppose bringing it back to, I suppose, the purpose and the vision that we had for the book, you know, that children have the skills within themselves, while as parents we can guide and support them, and we would hope that the book would do this. The book's, I suppose, the central message is that, look, you have all of these skills. Okay, we're here to help you perhaps see them or name them for you. But actually, that toolbox is within yourself. Yes. And you can navigate your life now and pick and choose which skill you need at particular times. So absolutely, we are around our children. We're very aware of what's going on. But we're trying to say to children, you have the skills. Yes. Now you go out and use them.
Yeah. Well, I think it's very exciting because I'm sticking with my description as a self-help book for children. And it's brilliant that they've been encouraged to do this at an early age.
Absolutely.
And hopefully it will lead to more rounded adults. Yeah.
And I think the fact when you say self-help, and it's not by coincidence that the double page spread is for play and for rest. And play is children's language, and children will express their feelings through play. And the best way a child can help themselves is actually by playing.
Yes.
And parents playing with a child and having those 10 minutes, that's the best thing you can do. And particularly this week, we would say that to everybody. Connection, play with your children, and then also not having them scheduled in an inch of their life, letting them have rest, letting them recharge.
Yeah.
You know, they all know about devices. Devices need to be recharged. It's the same, but giving them that, you know, kind of emotional self-awareness around their body and how they feel as well.
Approach,
so the book is the A to Z of Minding Me, and I say Z because it rhymes with me. I know that most people say Z.
Yeah.
And it's Tracy Flynn and Niamh Gogan. Thanks so much for coming in, and congratulations
again
on the book.
Ray.
That's it from us. Cormac and Sarah on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.